It is Monday, December 11th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, a suspect is in custody following a pipe bomb explosion near New York's Port Authority. President Donald Trump's decision to move the U.S. Embassy to Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem remains controversial, and France offers Chinese winemakers instruction in the industry. It's all ahead. Authorities in New York are investigating an explosion near the Port Authority bus terminal Monday. The small explosion occurred during New York City's morning rush hour, causing subway lines to be closed and streets blocked off. New York Mayor Bill de Blasio described the attack.
This was an attempted terrorist attack. Thank God the perpetrator did not achieve his ultimate goals. Thank God our first responders were there so quickly to address the situation to make sure people were safe.
New York Police Commissioner James O'Neill identified the suspect as 27-year-old Akayat Ullah and said he had an improvised low-tech explosive device attached to his body. John Miller is a counterterrorism official with the New York Police Department.
The device is based on a pipe bomb. It was affixed to his person with a combination of Velcro and zip ties.
I spoke with Asli Pellet, a reporter for VOA's Turkish service.
I am in the corner of 40th Street and 8th Avenue in front of Port Authority bus terminal. Police actually closed down the area down all the way from 38th Street, 39th Street. Traffic is shut down on 8th Avenue. I haven't walked to the 9th Avenue, but it's probably shut down from that area as well. 42nd Street traffic is closed down. Subway lines A, C, E are shut down. They don't actually go beyond Brooklyn. They do just stop service in Manhattan. And most of the subway lines are running with delays, and they're extremely busy. And I guess some of the offices in Midtown are calling their workers not to come to work today because of the situation.
Is there an increased police presence around?
Yes, there is an increased police presence around, and also fire department is sending trucks, and it seems like they're blocking off most areas. And what I can see from where I am is the subway station on 42nd Street all the way to Port Authority Terminal, they're all blocked, the area, and the police is continuing investigation at the moment down in the subway area and in the bus station.
Yeah, that's usually a very busy area of New York, around that Port Authority, because there's a lot of transportation links around there, a lot of buses, all kinds of things sort of convene there.
Yeah, it is where buses from New Jersey arrive, as well as most of the buses that connect New York to neighboring states and cities. It's a huge hub. It's working 24 hours. Usually it's open 24 hours. And the subway is around 42nd Street Times Square. Every subway line arrives into this area. So yes, this is probably the heart of New York when it comes to transportation. And plus all the tourism is around here, and it's Christmas time. And you can imagine there's so many tourists visiting New York just to see the Christmas lights and do some shopping around here.
Absolutely. Okay, Asli, is there anything else I should ask you or you want to tell me?
We know that the suspect is under custody and it's injured seriously. It's Bellevue Hospital in Manhattan. And so far, the latest numbers I have are 4 people injured during the incident because the bomb was exploded prematurely.
That's Asli Pellet. She's a reporter for VOA's Turkish service. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. Andrew, I know you have more on this blast in New York.
Yeah, as we learn more information, we're getting a lot more questions on social media and people trying to find out information about this blast. Certainly a lot of questions about the suspect who allegedly perpetrated the bombing, regarding his motive, his intended targets, if he acted alone. Apparently, he's from Bangladesh. which has taken on a political angle on social media, people talking about that Bangladesh is not one of the countries included in President Trump's travel ban. Some saying that using that information to question the efficacy of the ban, saying it should either be dropped altogether or expanded to confront the global terrorism threat. There are also concerns about violence against people from Bangladesh after this attack. I saw a number of tweets, people saying, let's not jump to conclusions or paint an entire race or an entire nationality based on one person and one incident. We also see a lot of information about the event itself. I saw an initial video that looked like it was filmed off of security camera footage that appears to show the moment the bomb went off. And there's also a photo circulating that purports to show the suspect on the ground in handcuffs after the attack. So we're seeing a lot of those images. Of course, social media is very visual, so it's not surprising that we're seeing that trending and spreading around. And then a lot of talk about the city of New York itself. New York is known as the city that never sleeps. It's always on the go. And judging from the New Yorkers that I've seen on social media, the terror attack does not seem to be deterring them. In fact, New York's governor, Andrew Cuomo, tweeted out about an hour ago. He said, let's get back to our daily business. We will never allow them to disrupt us. That's exactly what they want. And so we are seeing people, even in the midst of this investigation and the terrorism fear, are moving about their day saying, you know what, we have to keep on doing what we're doing.
Yeah, well, New York, unfortunately, has had so much, unfortunately, experience with this looking back at 9/11 and other incidents.
Exactly. And that was in that instance, and even earlier this year in Halloween and that attack that killed eight people, we saw a lot of that sentiment as well, that we're going to keep living our lives and we're not going to live our lives in fear. So you are seeing that today from New Yorkers. The other big story that kind of got lost in the midst of this attack, the Golden Globe Awards nominations announced today. Of course, it's one of the big film awards of the year, awarded by the Hollywood Foreign Press Association. So there is an international angle to that. And it's the first big film awards without Harvey Weinstein. Of course, he has been facing dozens and dozens of allegations of sexual assault and harassment. One of the titans, big producer in Hollywood, obviously not being reflected in the nominations this year. So a lot of people talking about that and their favorite shows and actors and actresses hoping and handicapping who might win when that ceremony happens later on in January.
Yeah, we'll all be waiting.
Yes.
Okay, thanks a lot, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Pelshevsky. Here are some of the top news stories that are trending. Russian President Vladimir Putin visits Syria and announces a Russian troop withdrawal. China touts an anti-corruption drive to promote a clean corridor with Pakistan. President Donald Trump makes a final pitch for embattled Alabama Republican Senate candidate Roy Moore. And U.S. officials and lawmakers warn more cyber campaigns are coming. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
French scientists say we humans as a species may have peaked and reached the maximum limits for height, lifespan, and physical performance. The researchers say their findings suggest humans have biological limitations that cannot be exceeded. Scientists say that despite increasing scientific, medical, and nutritional progress, these biological traits will no longer increase. Furthermore, the researchers also found that environmental changes caused by human activity, such as climate change, could have a harmful impact on these biological limitations. According to the researchers, signs that indicate we have reached the end of our biological limits will include fewer sports records being broken and that more people will not live beyond current life expectancy. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, Chinese winemakers learn the trade from their French counterparts. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, in talks in Brussels with the European Union, continue to praise President Donald Trump's decision to recognize Jerusalem as Israel's capital.
Jerusalem is Israel's capital. No one can deny it. It doesn't obviate peace. It makes peace possible because recognizing reality is the substance of peace. It's the foundation of peace.
He said the Trump administration will be offering a new peace proposal soon. And he said he believes all or most of the moves east to Jerusalem, recognizing it as Israel's capital. EU foreign policy chief Frederica Mogherini, however, said the only realistic solution to the conflict between Israel and the Palestinians is based on two states, with Jerusalem as the capital of both the State of Israel and the State of Palestine along the 1967 line. U.S. UN Ambassador Nikki Haley Sunday defended President Trump's decision to recognize Jerusalem as Israel's capital.
It's the right thing to do. Israel should be no different. We didn't set any parameters. We didn't say this was the final status. What we said is we're going to do like we do in every other country, and we're going to put the embassy in its capital, and we're going to continue and are going to continue that fact that we are as committed to the peace process as we've ever been before, and we're going to keep going until we get it.
Meanwhile, the White House expressed disappointment that the Palestinians canceled a planned meeting with Vice President Mike Pence. University of San Francisco Mideast Studies Chair and Professor Stephen Zunis tells International Edition's Victor Beatty, repeated calls for Israel to freeze settlement activity, most recently made Sunday by French President Emmanuel Macron, have gone unheeded.
The eastern half of the city, in fact, is recognized by the United Nations and the international community as a territory under foreign belligerent occupation. And the settlements in Greater East Jerusalem, along with the West Bank, are illegal, according to the Fourth Geneva Convention, no less than five UN Security Council resolutions, as well as a landmark decision of the International Court of Justice. The call for a freeze on the settlements has been made repeatedly by successive U.S. administrations up until the current one, as well as the much-vaunted Roadmap for Peace, the Mitchell Plan, and other peace proposals that have gone forward. So it's very unlikely that this latest plea by the French leader is going to make much of a difference in terms of Israel's plans.
On U.S. television Sunday, U.S. UN Ambassador Nikki Haley said the U.S. is as committed to the peace process as we've ever been. She went on to say that Mr. Trump didn't talk about boundaries, he didn't talk about borders, because the final status of Jerusalem is between the Palestinians and Israelis. It's not for the Americans to decide.
The U.S. recognition of Jerusalem as Israel's capital definitely puts the thumb on the scale in the Israelis' favor. In addition, the emphasis that they are recognizing all of Jerusalem as the country's capital does very much imply a recognition of Israeli control, not just of West Jerusalem, where most Israeli government buildings are located, but the occupied Arab-populated part of the city as well. As a result, it's really hard to see what kind of peace process the United States is looking for. I mean, certainly the Trump administration is willing to continue dialogue, but by the continued expansion of Israeli settlements, U.S. recognition of all of Jerusalem as Israel's capital, the amount of territory left in which a independent, viable Palestinian state could be formed is shrinking week by week.
Randolph Macon College and Virginia history professor Michael Fishbach said whatever U.S. peace proposal is brought forward, the Palestinians will be negotiating from a position of weakness.
Israel is in a position, both on the ground and in terms of its complete 100% backing from the United States, to essentially do what it wants and to tell the Palestinians, as President Trump did, here's the reality, we recognize reality, accept it, and move forward. For the Palestinians, the peace process going back to 1991 has been a series of acceptances of Israeli diktats, American realities, as they call it. And for the Palestinians, they have essentially spent the last 20, 25 years accepting the parameters established by the U.S. and Israel and getting, from their perspective, very little in return. And so for Israel and or the United States tell the Palestinians, look, you need to be realistic, here's the reality, move forward from here, from the Palestinian point of view, that's not a reality they're accepting. It's yet another diktat. And that's the problem that President Mahmoud Abbas faces, is that both he and his predecessor Yasser Arafat have dealt with a peace process that has essentially been a series of ground rules dictated to them. They've accepted them, expecting to move forward, and very little has happened to them in return. And so the current Palestinian leadership is really torn between continuing a peace process that has brought them nothing and brought them nothing but scorn from their people, or walking away from it with very little else in hand to back them up.
Michael Fischbach said only the Americans have the clout to move the peace process forward. And with last week's U.S. announcement about Israel, the Palestinians view the U.S. as fatally flawed and have very little to fall back on. This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hi, this is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossing. I feature music and interviews with your favorite artists from all around the world. And you can not only listen, but you can interact live with us here in Washington, D.C. Border Crossings comes to you Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC GMT on VOA.
This is International Edition. Economic powerhouse China is setting its sights on a new sector. Experts predict that by 2020, the country will rank just behind Spain as the world's biggest wine market. That means training a new generation in the art of oenology, or the study of wines, as Lisa Bryant reports for VOA from Dijon, capital of the Eastern Burgundy region.
Nowhere in New Zealand's far from the coast. The coolest area perhaps is Central Otago.
Learning about new world wines in one of the planet's oldest winemaking regions. This afternoon's class at the School of Wine and Spirits in Dijon, France, offers a virtual tour of winemaking in Australia, New Zealand, South Africa, and California.
So great varieties, Sauvignon Blanc, I've just said.
There is one country that is not covered, at least not yet. China, home to nearly one-third of the student body here at the School of Wine and Spirits Business.
Okay, so here is the map of New Zealand. What do you need?
Lei Shu wants to become a wine buyer for a Chinese company.
Actually, the wine culture in China now is not very good because most people, they don't know how to taste the wines. But so we still have a long way to do and to teach the Chinese people how to taste the wines, how to enjoy our wines.
Cabernet Merlot, very important. Merlot, this is one class.
Students here are learning about every aspect of the wine business. For Chinese like Shu, they have plenty of work ahead.
They want to go back home with the best practice in order to be able to produce the best wines they can.
Director Jérôme Gallo runs the wine school, which is part of the Burgundy School of Business in Dijon.
And probably in a decade or two decades, Chinese, some of them will be alumni of our programs, Chinese people will be able to produce very qualitative wines at a large scale.
China is not just producing wine, it's also a big wine importer. Rich Chinese are snapping up French vineyards, mostly in the southwestern Bordeaux region. But Chinese tourists are also heading to Burgundy to sip and buy bottles from another prestige region. Dijon wine merchant Adrien Tirelli says he tries to share his passion about wines.
Chinese people, like all the new consumers,
just learn in the guide. And then they come with the books and they tell me, I want this one, this one, this one. Perhaps like the Americans 15 years ago.
But things are changing quickly, partly fueled by rising incomes. Student Yishun Hao says that while older Chinese stick to domestic wines, the new generation is more adventurous.
They are more open-minded to the French culture and French wines, so maybe they knew much more better than the old generation. But for the like upper class or middle class people, a lot of people, they want to consume wines from different region like Oriental. They're trying to discover new things, and it's kind of a symbol of wealthy and a luxury thing for them.
Okay, great varieties. Cabernet Merlot.
The school's research director, Steve Charters, agrees things are changing fast.
The Chinese wine industry is developing rapidly. The quality of their wine is improving substantially, and they are learning what works well.
Even recently, in the last 30 years, has been a big...
It seems only a matter of time before China will be the next star of this New World Wines class. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Dijon, France.
Making me thirsty. Well, that is our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Corruption is an abuse of power at every level that impacts rich and poor countries alike, in both the private and public sectors. Corruption undermines development, erodes confidence in democratic institutions, and facilitates transnational crime, including organized crime and terrorism. It distorts markets, discourages investors, and stunts economic growth. And it is particularly destructive to communities in developing countries, where it blocks development and progress. That is why, 14 years ago, the United Nations General Assembly adopted the UN Convention Against Corruption. The UNCAC as a new global legal framework for preventing and combating corruption. Our frameworks, laws, and policies, and related international cooperation are undoubtedly better today compared to 2005. However, our job is not finished, said Acting Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary for International Narcotics and Law Enforcement Affairs, James Walsh, at the 7th Conference of States Parties to the UNCAC. The convention provides us a common basis to take all the necessary steps to prevent and combat corruption if we have enough political will and use the treaty effectively, said Mr. Walsh. Indeed, the United States is fully committed to supporting and implementing the UN Convention Against Corruption, both internationally and domestically. In 2016, the United States had a record year for enforcement of the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act against corporate defendants, to include final enforcement actions against 28 multinational companies, said Mr. Walsh. The United States also targets ill-gotten gains, working with our international partners and through the Department of Justice's Kleptocracy Asset Recovery Initiative. Since 2010, the United States has seized or frozen over $3 billion in corruption-related proceeds and so far has returned over $150 million of it. Another $30 million is in process. As we implement the UN Convention Against Corruption, we must also draw on all sectors of society to fight corruption, including civil society organizations and the private sector, said Mr. Walsh. Good faith efforts by the United States or any single country will never be enough. We all must work together to adopt and enforce international standards of integrity, accountability, and transparency.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.